Hello, and welcome to Android Developers Backstage.
I like that little spike in your voice.
Yeah.
That was made it exciting.
Yeah, I'm trying to convey energy, because this is an exciting episode.
Trying to.
Yeah, so I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
I'm Chad Haas from the UI Toolkit team.
And I'm Roman Guy from A team.
Okay, from the Nameless team. And your team does graphics and Kotlin.
Right.
All right.
That's an interesting combo. Is that just because you have two interests, or is there some sort of natural...
It's because I really like graphics and I really like Kotlin.
Okay, all right. I should have a team that does tooling and ice cream.
I wanted the ice cream team, but you already took it.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, what should we talk about?
How about tools?
Again?
I know, Tor made us. He said like some stuff was released in the last week, so maybe we should talk about that stuff.
Yeah, and we could also throw in some stuff about KotlinConf, since this is KotlinConf week when we're recording this.
It is.
It's actually starting tomorrow, as of the recording.
So theoretically, they would record those sessions and post them. Realistically, we have absolutely no idea, but I don't know why they wouldn't.
We can make promises for them, right?
Sure. We totally promise that they're going to do whatever they're going to do, and we think they're going to record it. So hopefully you'll be able to check those out if you weren't at the conference. Interesting things on so I am going because I am interested in Kotlin. However, I am not doing a lot of Kotlin development yet. But
are you doing
I was,
a lot of development at all?
No comment, Senator. But I was interested to see there are a smattering of sessions all over the place. Like there's introductory sessions, there's advanced development sessions, there's talks about new features.
Right. And what's interesting is we know that Kotlin is pretty popular amongst Android developers. So there's a few Android speakers who will be part of the conference.
Including you.
I'm part of a panel.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if that counts.
Sure. That means you're an expert, right?
I will just pontificate.
There you go. Jake? Jake is doing a
Jake
talk?
Jake is there. UN and Christina are giving a talk.
Okay.
Tor is giving a talk.
I'm giving a talk.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
Let me guess. Lint?
That's right. So this is a talk I've been wanting to give for years and years, but I never have at I.O. because Lint doesn't have a stable API. KotlinConf seems like a good place to do that. Plus, there's a lot of Kotlin-specific stuff in Lint, which we'll talk about in the
tools portion. What do you mean, Kotlin-specific rules, or is it implemented in
Kotlin? It's both, right?
Okay.
So... I guess now we're sort of getting into the whole what's new in 3.1. But Lint now, as of 3.0, when Studio runs Lint, it supports Kotlin. In 3.1, it works everywhere, including from the Gradle plugin.
Wait. Can you clarify? I didn't understand the distinction there. You said we support it, but in the next release, it works. So
Lint is embedded. It's a static analyzer that is supported in many different tools. So it is integrated natively in the IDE.
Yep.
It's integrated natively in Gradle, as well as in Eclipse and in Ant and some other places, right? So in the IDE, as of 3.0, Lint works for Kotlin. If you open up a Kotlin file, Lint works there. It did not work from Gradle in 3.0 because there was various problems having the Kotlin plugin in Gradle work with Lint's copy of the Kotlin compiler. It basically just didn't work. So
okay,
it didn't
try. But I'm gonna take another run at this. I don't understand the distinction, being Gradle ignorant as I am, between it works in the IDE but it doesn't work in Gradle. The IDE is using Gradle to do the build. So what's the piece that's missing?
So it's not when you're building. So when you're typing in the editor.
Yeah.
We run Lint on the fly. You know those warnings that show up within a second? That's not compiling and running Gradle. That's Lint analyzing directly on top of the warm data structures in the editor.
Okay, when you actually do the build and it generates all the build warnings that you were ignoring when you were typing in the editor.
Yeah, most people in the IDE, when they're building from the IDE, they're just building. They're not running Lint.
Yep.
So that's the distinction.
Okay.
Yeah, so now we have support for Kotlin stuff in Lint. A bit of history. So the ancestor of Lint that I wrote before you took
layout
over and made it good, right, was written in Groovy. And that was before Gradle. And so now it's written in bits of Kotlin, but it works within Gradle that itself uses Groovy.
Well, so Lint is, half the API is now, actually almost half of Lint is written in Kotlin at this point. So there's that side. And then there's the side of, hey, it supports analyzing code that is itself written in Kotlin.
Right.
So anyway, that's my talk. It's talking about how to write Lint checks, how to write them correctly to analyze Kotlin code, because there's a bunch of special things you have to think of. One thing, for example, I ran into is that I had Lint checks that were trying to find all the exit points of a method. So they were looking for the, return expressions. Well, guess what? In Kotlin, you can have a method that returns without a return statement.
Right.
Right. So like there's things like that you have to be aware of when you're doing AST analysis.
What is the point of no return?
We've made that joke already last week.
But Tor didn't hear it at the time, so okay. We get right. to make it again.
Well, I appreciate it.
So you are normally the one that submits feature requests to the guests that are on the show.
Yeah.
For some reason, I never have fresh ideas. But since you're more of the guest this week, I have a feature request for you, which is we were talking to Kotlin folks recently about some of the things that you can do in writing Kotlin code, which under the hood are, unbeknownst to you, going to generate garbage. Because they are boxing things.
Which is why you should always look at the bytecode while you're typing.
So that is one approach. You could actually, look at the bytecode for everything you do. But wouldn't it be nice if the IDE and lint actually gave you a warning, some indicator, so that you knew what was going on under the hood? They thought that was a good idea. And in fact, they suggested that I submit that feature to you. So that's
what I'm doing. Audience, Tor is making a note right now on his phone.
That'd be a good one. Auto box warnings in Kotlin.
And speaking of lint and guidelines in general, so by the time this episode comes out, we would have had announced the interop guide and star guide for Kotlin.
That's one of the things we're launching at KotlinConf.
Right. And I assume that lint checks that those guidelines are implemented properly.
I'm not sure about that actually.
Okay.
I'll have to look at them.
Because there's two parts to it. There's one that's just our style guide for Kotlin code. If you're going to write Kotlin code, you can follow our style guide.
Tabs or spaces?
Spaces.
Oh,
and
okay.
Indents of four spaces. And Jake Wharton, who wrote the style guide, was not super happy about that. Because
he wanted two spaces?
He's a two spaces person.
Yeah.
But obviously he's wrong. So.
The way you said that, I was thinking, okay, so you put in for every indent, you have four spaces and Jake Wharton. So.
Yes, that's how it works. We have new emoji that's going to be in Android 8.1. Good. I was going to say something serious, and Chet, you broke my brain.
Spaces versus guide. Tabs is a life and death matter. We do not
right.
joke about this.
So there's a star guide, but there's also the API interop guide. So if you're going to write Kotlin code or Java, if you're going to write Java APIs and you want them to be invoked from Kotlin, we give you a few guidelines on how to do it. For instance, if you have a Java API that takes a runnable as a parameter, it should be the last parameter, so you can use the nice block syntax for lambdas on the Kotlin side.
So that's super interesting for people like us because we're writing libraries, but also external developers that write libraries, all the open source libraries out there. How can
exactly.
they make their libraries evolve with Kotlin?
Another one, don't call your method plus, because that becomes an operator on the Kotlin side.
So having a method called plus is a minus.
Exactly.
All right.
Or a plus. Right? I mean, maybe you want that to be an operator.
Maybe.
Because I think it only does that if the types are compatible, right? And then.
Right, but you still should be aware of what you're doing. Because if you're not writing Kotlin yourself, you might not realize the implications.
I'm pretty surprised, actually, that they would do that for Java code, that they would take operator overloading names. I totally get why you do that in Kotlin. Why in Kotlin, if you write plus, that should be an operator. And I think there's an operator keyword. Surprised they do that from Java, but, I guess it's a feature. All right, so we have the interoperability guide, and then we have a new style guide. And I think JetBrains has posted one for Kotlin as well. How does our style guide for Android Kotlin differ from the standard one?
That's a very good question, and I will put my best people on it, and as soon as I have an answer for you. I don't remember the exact details. They are very similar. There are some variations, but I honestly don't remember the differences. What I can tell everyone here, and I'm sure many people in the audience will love it, there's no more M prefix for the fields.
Oh, that's good. I always hated the M prefix.
So it's K now?
No, there's no prefix. But that makes sense, right? Because in Kotlin, the names define the names of the properties.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have suddenly your methods start with an M.
Because there's the implicit setters and getters associated with the property.
I always felt like the M prefix was sort of dated back to the days when you didn't have an IDE. Like in an IDE, this whole issue you have where you don't realize that there's no field that you're reassigning to self, IDEs warn about that. Fields are highlighted in different color. Like I just feel like this whole hey, I must put a different name on this so that in a textual code review, I can spot it. Feels very dated.
It is true, and I've never been fond of this prefix myself, but over the years I've grown, especially when you're always writing code in a giant code base like Android and you're not always typing code in parts of the code base you understand or are familiar with, it was nice even with the IDE knowing that if I just type M, my auto-completion will give me the list of the fields and nothing else.
Also, when you're reviewing somebody else's code, you don't have the advantage of the IDE, right?
Yeah,
so then
I just
you
feel
can
like,
see what's going on.
You know, generally, you know, there's a command F12 shows you the, you know, the structure of the file, which gives you the fields. You typically don't have that many local variables, right? Control space normally is. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Have you seen some of the methods in the Android code base?
Yeah, we should maybe think about those.
The ones that are several thousand lines long, where you get a warning from IntelliJ saying, I can't do a static analysis, I give up, this is too big.
Yeah, well, didn't the M also give you things like methods that start with the name M, and there's probably dozens of those?
I like it for the onomatopoeia. It lends credence to the fact that the developer thought about the name. They were like, foo.
Oh, I see it more like as a good thing, you know, like, dessert.
Yeah, we should have more of that in there.
Yeah.
But statics, nobody likes those because they're like,
yeah, ooh. Not good. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that we got rid of those. And I assume that's in probably not different from the Kotlin style guide, I would think.
So back to Studio.
Studio. So we launched 3.0
Yay.
Last week.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
finally.
We need a sound effect in this podcast. We need like cheering crowds and confetti sound. So we'll work on that. All right.
Because when was the first 3.0 preview was shown at I/O, right?
Yeah, but we cheated because...
That never happens at conferences.
Well, what I mean is that 3.0 really was a renumbering of the 2.4 branch, right? So we actually did preview 2.4 back in March, maybe. I don't know exactly, but it was early spring, right?
Oh, right. I remember that.
And so 2.4 was our next release.
So here's a question for you.
Yeah.
What warrants the number? Why 3?
So I was one of the people who basically argued we should switch to major number. And here are the reasons. First one is we looked at what is coming in 3, right? It was like full support for Kotlin, brand new profilers, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some really big stuff. I mean, there's Instant App, there's, you know, Layout Editor.
The new Gradle plugin, big changes, Java 8?
Yeah, Java 8 support with the desugar. There were just tons of stuff, and we thought, if this does not add up to a new version number, what will? We will have 2.8, 2.9, 2.10. We will be in 2 forever. Right. And the other thing is that we had gone to a major version roughly once a year, like 1.0 and then 2.0 roughly a year later. Right. So it felt like, you know what, this warrants a full new version number.
Good.
Yeah. Plus, and the nice thing is that we've just released a 3.1 preview and everyone knows that version 3.1 of something is when it becomes good. Right.
Wait, are you saying people should not use 3.0?
Yeah, way to kill the joy from the new release. Like, here's the real thing in its full release, and please use this. By the way, really cool stuff you can use instead.
Well, you know, I use nightly builds of everything, right? So, you know, to me, 3.1 is where it's at. But no, 3.0 is now stable and very, very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when we talked to Esteban about profiling tools, that was the stuff that was going into 2.4, right?
Yes.
So we were saying, okay, and this will be out soon.
So now it's
then it was out in preview. So that was actually planned to be full release before this, right?
No.
Or was
like
that always going
to be? Like it was for the 2.4 release that, again, just got renumbered when we got to I/O. But it launched, we wanted to not do this thing that we do every year where we put a bunch of new features in the I/O build. And then it's really low quality because we haven't had any external feedback. So for profilers, we thought, look, we really want to get some external usage of this so that by I/O, when we talk about it, we actually have had external people try it and we fixed the worst bugs that we didn't see, right? So it was a bit of a soft launch in that regard. Whereas many things we've done in the past, we go, big announcement at I/O, you know, check out new layout editor, like, you know, constraint layout and so on, Kotlin. Whereas profiler, we rolled out. So 2.4 started in March, and we renumbered it in May, I guess, to be 3.0, but we had previews from then. And it took us another, you know, many months to ship. Basically,
just to change all the instances of 2.4 to 3 in the code base. I mean, it's
that
a
was
big
definitely
code base.
A tough change, yeah.
If only there was refactoring.
What really was made this release take so long was we made some massive changes to the build system, right, that we hadn't really initially planned on doing.
Oh, is this where we talk about Gradle?
Yeah, great. Your favorite part.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
try to contain
your
excitement.
You can go to sleep. We'll talk about Gradle.
So not just Gradle, right? So we had an interview a year ago with Adam Lisinski about AAPT 2. Remember that?
Yep.
So, you know.
We made a default. Wait, is it default?
Yeah.
In 3.0?
Yes. And we
that's big.
Basically, we had tied a bunch of stuff together. The support for instant apps, the support for next generation Gradle architecture, and all these other things. It was in this future Gradle feature branch. And then we realized, or, you know, found out that we had to ship Instant App support now at I/O. And that meant that we suddenly had to pull up all the things we had sort of thought, well, you know, we'll get to this soon, and do it now instead. And so that's why there were so many big changes to the build system, because using this required using APD2, and there was packaging and desugar and all these other things all sort of coming together into a really complex release, which is why it's so big and why it took us so long to get it done.
Yeah.
But it was worth it. You know, we're on really solid technical, you know, foundation now.
So I'm trying to cast my mind back to that podcast and remember. I think the big takeaway from AAPT2 was incremental build. So this should have had a really big positive impact on build.
It's one of the big differences. Yeah, APT used to take all your resources.
Right.
And every time you made a change, you would recompile everything. Whereas yeah. AAPT2 works more like a traditional compiler where you can compile resources independently and then at the end gather everything and link.
So if you change one resource, it's just going to recompile that one thing and not everything along the way. Right. So,
yeah, and I can imagine the impact that would have on the build system.
I assume, because I think that's one of the slower parts about build in general, and build speed is one of the bigger feature requests, perennial feature requests for studio users, right?
Yeah. I don't know how, I mean, clearly in a massive project, the resource packaging takes a while. Typically, Dex is a bigger problem and ProGuarding, and that's right. Really where the bulk is still.
So speaking of Dex and ProGuarding, there was something in preview in 3.0, or there is something in preview in 3.0 that's the new...
Yes, we have the replacement for Dex called D8. I'm not sure why it's called that, maybe because a lot of people worked on it came from the V8 people.
I like the fact that it's date.
I don't know why V8 is called V8 either, but...
I assume that it was because it was the eighth attempt, you know. They started with V1 and then went up to V8. So D8 is a replacement for Dex, a complete replacement. It's a much faster and... I think speed is not just the only concern.
In terms of optimizations, right? I think doesn't it try to reorder the content of the Dex file so that the startup time will be
yes.
faster?
Yes. So in addition to compilation itself being faster, I think it results in smaller code and faster code. And I think architecturally it's more sound. I think DX, we tried to hack on it a few times to make some things faster when we were working on instant run, but it was very difficult to modify. D8 is sort of really solid foundation. And it's in 3.0, but it's off by default. However, after we shipped 3.0, we started shipping 3.1 canaries last week as well. And in 3.1, we've turned D8 on by default.
So there's D8, but there's also R8.
Yeah, so D8 is intended for debug builds, and it does not do any shrinking, and its focus is on, you know, being able to do things incrementally.
Oh,
whereas R8 is you know, the replacement that does full program analysis to shrink things and make them really fast. And so its focus is not compilation speed, but really making sure that the binary you put out is as good as it can be.
So it's D for debug and R for release.
Yeah.
So my understanding is that R8 replaces ProGuard, or does it use this ProGuard internally?
So I don't know the details, but I'm also under the impression that it's a complete replacement, right? That basically the front end for D8 and R8 builds up all these data structures, right? And then they sort of do various processing on that, and the back end for R8 is going to do a lot more work, obviously.
Yeah, no matter what, it's exciting that we have, because DX was pretty old. I mean, when I joined in 2007, DX was already being worked on, and so it's, 10 years old at this point?
Yeah.
And it was never intended, we didn't need ProGuard back then, so it was never intended to work in those, you know, bigger environments for very large apps. So it's nice that we have those replacements coming that take that into account.
Yeah, and ProGuard is a very old tool. I think it was written for like Java ME apps and mm-hmm. things like that way back in the day.
Yeah. But so it's good to unify all those steps.
Yeah, and I think what ProGuard really misses is ProGuard is a bytecode-based analyzer, right? And so mm-hmm. it does not do anything about resources. So in our tool chain, we have written a resource shrinker in Gradle. And so it takes the output of ProGuard and says, okay, well, these are the remaining code classes, let's see which resources they reference. So we can prune any resources that aren't referenced from the remaining code. But if those resources are referencing code, you know,
I see what you mean.
There, you can't sort of prune back and forth that way, right? So basically anything that is referenced by any resource will probably be retained by ProGuard because it doesn't know that. That custom view never gets called. So it'll say this code is referenced from resources, I'm going to have to keep it, right? But I assume that the R8 people can look at both. Right, and do global shrinking, which should be even better.
Wait, so I obviously missed something here. D8 is not just a replacement for the Dex compiler, but it combines the Dex compiler and ProGuard. So ProGuard has gone away from the build process.
We're talking about R8.
We're talking about, okay, sorry, yeah. R8, but yeah.
Yes.
Same technology, but basically ProGuard, people will not be using ProGuard anymore in Android builds.
That is my understanding.
Is that
now,
right?
I don't work on this, but that's my understanding.
Okay.
And it makes perfect sense because, again...
Just because it has a global view of all the information.
It already has a global view from generating the code. It's very simple then when you have that graph to say, okay, and now let's prune, as opposed to having to generate... Because remember, R8 generates decks. It does not generate class files. ProGuard operates on class files. So if you want to keep ProGuard, there's all this extra work you'd have to do. You know, generate the class files, then have ProGuard read them, then have ProGuard shrink, then, you know, then convert those class files back to decks. This is a massive waste of time. The R8 compiler basically can just read all this, build up its graphs, and do this global analysis to make the code smaller.
And if our listeners want to learn more about, you know, how ProGuard works, what DX actually does, and what R8 does, Jake Wharton gave a talk last week at DroidCon UK called Sinking Your Teeth into Bytecode.
Yes.
Very interesting talk where he shows a lot of, you know, assembly, bytecode assembly, and all the way to machine code assembly. But it's a very good tour of what happens, you know, what happens to your source code when you go through those different compilation steps.
Cool. All right. And so this then also replaces Desugar, right? So Desugar is this tool we added in the spring, which replaced...
In preview builds or in a release?
It was in 3.0. So 3.0 has this. So when one of the features we have in 3.0 is support for Java 8 language features, right? So things like lambdas, right?
Right.
And so what people did in the past was they would use either the external source project, Retro Lambda, which would do bytecode rewriting, or they would use Jack, which was, you know, this compiler we worked on for a while that would sort of go straight from Java source to Java language source to DEX bytecode. As a replacement for that, you can now use Java C, and then Desugar takes the bytecode and rewrites it, takes the Java 1, that 8 bytecode, and rewrites it to be compatible in a backwards way. So that's something we've added to the build chain now automatically. If you set your source language to 1.8, this just happens for you. So you can get rid of you know, other tools that did that. And it's supported. It handles all these scenarios correctly. But it does, you know, add a, I actually don't know the exact cost, but I was under the impression that something like 15% of your build time is added by adding Desugar. This again goes away when you get to D8, which can do this directly.
Okay, so it's probably doing something similar, but it just does it as part of the build process instead of an additive.
Exactly.
Step.
There's not a million way to do what Desugar does. Again, Jake in his talk shows what happens. So typically, a lambda becomes a method in a class, and that class invokes a method. So that adds some bytecode to the application.
So that's, I guess, D8. And so D8 is now on in 3.1. So we definitely want feedback on whether that is just a
seamless. So what else do we get in 3.1? I think there's new profiler support for native code. You don't know.
I did not hear that. So it may not have shipped yet. It could be. It totally could be true. So, I mean, I can tell you what I'm aware of in 3.1. In the profile area specifically, there's now a threads view in the network analyzer, which, you know...
That sounds useful.
Yeah. I haven't used it, but it sounds useful. We've made some more work, since we're talking about builds, we've continued working on instant run, right? And one of the really nice things that the platform has done is in O, we have native support for some of the things that we hacked around before. So one of the things we can do is we can put resources into a split APK. So in older versions, we used reflection and all kinds of tricks in order to be able to push resources into the app. In O, we can basically put the resources into sharded APK splits, and we can use ADB to push those resources onto the app without killing it. And we have a new ADB command where we can restart activities. So all these things that we did through hacks and crazy hacks up until now, when you are running on O, we get to use platform-supported mechanisms for this, so it should be much more reliable. You know, we've tried to fix all the reflection hacks, you know, based on bug reports. But for us to be able to use things that are basically built into the platform is much better. So if you use 3.1 and run on O, typically in an emulator, you know, that's gonna work in a much better way, I think.
Yeah, that's great news because I really love instant run, and I'm always happily surprised by what it manages to do.
Yeah, yeah. And so now it should do it always, hopefully. And if not, you know, we want to know. Let's see. We have of course, I'm back to talking about lint again.
Of course.
So there's several things in lint. In addition to, you know, various new lint checks, like I said, it runs on Kotlin. The other thing is that lint now is available for non-Android projects. So we had a bunch of users who liked using all the support annotations, things like, you know, the int range and size and you must call super, all these things. They liked that in their Android code and said, hey, I want to use this in my server code. Why can't I? So we have a standalone Gradle plugin now where you can sort of get a lint target. Actually, I added support for half float. So, you know, Roman added half floats to the framework, right? These are these shorts where you can sort of pack a bunch of bits together. And so there's a bunch of new lint checks taking advantage of better infrastructure. So many of the checks are now smarter. They work deeper. And the half float takes advantage of this. So for example, if you have a variable that's been annotated with half float, and then later in that method, you happen to like add one to it, it'll warn you, hey, you know, you're widening from a short to an int here. Or, you know, if you try to annotate an int with half float, it's going to complain, things like that.
Okay, so why did you add half floats?
Because they're super useful for graphics.
Is this part of your color work?
It was, yes. So we have this new representation for colors. We used to have the color ints, so now we have the color longs. Because 8 bits is not enough to accurately represent wide gamut color spaces.
8 bits per channel.
8 bits per channel, yes. So in the long, what we can do is we can use 48 bits for RGB, so 16 bit per channel, and we store a half float, which can represent any color space out there. It can also be used for HDR, stuff like that. And then in addition, anybody who does OpenGL, it's pretty common to store your vertices or other kind of data as half floats to save space. So now we have support in the platform to generate those numbers, those values.
Yeah, and so it tells you if you're calling math that round on one of these, it says you should be calling half that round instead, things like that. So I guess I won't talk more about lint. Come to my talk.
Yes, you will.
We've improved the support for importing SVGs, so it now handles gradients and things like that, which is pretty useful because people want to use gradients, it turns out.
How about adaptive icons? Is there support in Studio for that?
Yeah, so we added support for that in 3.0. We have a whole wizard that lets you do this and lets you preview what happens. However, it had the same issue with import, right? That it wasn't handling some of these scenarios. So we basically have fixed a bunch of bugs. We didn't dare to put them in 3.0 at the last minute. We tried to sort of stop ourselves from continuing to always add things, right?
It's good to ship.
Yeah, it's good to ship. So 3.0, we stopped. 3.1 has all these improvements. Let's see. In the Room support. So Room is our new database library.
Right. So that just lifecycle and Room stuff just went 1.0 recently.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so Room is actually pretty heavily tied to SQL or SQL. I'm not sure. Where do you fall on pronouncing SQL, SQL?
SQL.
SQL. All right.
Sure.
Okay. We'll go with SQL here. The official pronunciation of this podcast is SQL. All right. So it's pretty SQL heavy. And we added editor support in 3.0 for editing SQL, SQL strings within the annotation.
Code completion,
all that stuff. In 3.1, it's getting a lot fancier, right? It's really smart about subqueries, you know, figuring out table names from surrounding context. And SQL is kind of weird in that the order is a bit odd. You have to kind of look forwards to figure out what things are referring to.
This seems like kind of a huge project, right?
Isn't it
another language that you had to add code completion for?
Yeah. Okay. Well, we started that work in 3.0, actually. We just didn't talk much about it because it was a bit limited, but in 3.1, it's getting, you know, it's getting better.
Nice.
Wait.
So you brought that up in the context of Room, but we've been supporting SQLite for years, right?
Right. But in the context of Room, you put the SQL in annotations, if I remember properly.
Yep.
So you have a good context to know where the completion
now should be. So the way this works is with IntelliJ's language embedding mechanism, right? So if you annotate that some element is a string of a given language and there's some known, well-known language name, so we have a new one for SQLite.
You said SQLite is the official pronunciation.
Well, no, because it would be SQLite. So we have to decide if we can do SQLite or SQLite.
Maybe it's the Welsh variation, so there's actually two L's in there, SQLite.
And that's why we have to do graphics.
Decide. Maybe this is a good reason why we should call it SQL instead, because, you know, otherwise we have a problem.
Okay, but so does that mean that if you're just using SQLite without room, you could annotate a string variable that has the SQLite information? I'm not a database programmer.
That is right. This is one of my favorite features in IntelliJ, and I have many, right? And in fact, let's talk about lint again. In my test infrastructure, I don't like to put test files, you know, as random files on disk. I like to inline the source code right in the unit test so that I can see, here's the code snippet and here is the check running on it. And because what I do is I annotate that method saying, whenever you get a, you know, a call to this method, my test Java, for example, or test Kotlin, expect that string to be of language Java or Kotlin. Then it gets syntax highlighted right there in the editor so I can see, oh, okay, that's a keyword and here's a, you know. So this language support is a generic facility they have. In the room support, we take advantage of this. And so we've basically teaching the IDE, when you see the query annotation, its parameter is a string of type, SQLite. And you, in your own code, could do the same. You could say, I have my helper method, which takes my thing and builds up a string. If you annotate in the same way, the editor will magically know, and it'll suddenly be eligible for find use of this refactoring in the works.
Now I have a feature request for you. I want support for GLSL shaders.
Oh.
There's a plugin for IntelliJ that's really, really good.
Good. I'm glad, because we used to have, I think it might have been an OpenGL plugin, and I don't want to name names, but there was a, you know, sort of open source plugin that I think was for OpenGL shader files or something. And back in the day, it was horrible. Like, you know, we would get these bug reports saying, you know, my CPU is pegged, the editor's hanging, and I would ask for a thread dump, and every time it would point to this one plugin. But people were really using it because they would open one of their files.
Of course.
And yes. IntelliJ, when it sees a file that it doesn't know about, but it recognizes the extension, it says, oh, this is a shader file. Would you like to install this plugin for it? And so it really kind of drove people to install this thing that wasn't working well.
So I'm pretty sure it's the same plugin.
Maybe it just got better.
But I have no issues with it. I use it every day, so.
Yeah, this is like 3 years ago. This was early days. I just haven't heard about it. And it might have been, and I'm not sure now, we might have gone and said, if it's this thing, don't suggest it because it breaks everybody, right? So it could
be. Stop doing that.
Yeah. So if it's better, we should.
Just to belabor the point about the SQLite language understanding, if you want that in your code right now, all you have to do is annotate it so that we know, so that IntelliJ knows or Android Studio knows how to interpret it. What you're saying about room is we implicitly annotate it for you. So they don't have to add the annotation.
Right.
But when they call the room APIs, we know that that takes a SQLite string, therefore.
That's right.
Okay, good.
That's right.
Now I understand.
Yeah. And so we basically are modeling a language that the specific, you know, SQLite dialect of SQL, we model that, as well as some of the room enhancements. I do not know the details, but I think that there's a special, you know, SQL syntax for parameters, and I think we maybe have enhanced it a bit so that you can set up a query that takes parameters that we are passing in, and we can figure that out. So that's at work, and it's in 3.1, although it's not all checked in yet. It's just going to get gradually better. So if you use Room, definitely try 3.1. This is not in 3.1 yet, and as always, we don't make any promises, but, you know, people have asked us, hey, you know, 3.0 is based on IntelliJ 2017.1. That's ancient. You know, when are we going to get .2 or better yet .3? And so, you know, we are currently trying to do a merge, just like I believe JetBrains is currently merging Studio 3.0 into their code base, right? So I hope, no promises, I hope that in 3.1, you know, we're going to have a newer version of the IDE.
I love this as like a you know, no guarantees, but huge future thing coming. A future version of Android Studio will be based on current versions of IntelliJ. Whoa.
I know. It's not surprising, but I know people have asked.
Yep.
On the other hand, we do have a policy of not saying, oh, yeah, we're doing that. Right? Even though, you just did. Well, so again, I am not promising it, but, you know, I consider it important, right? And so you don't have to send feature requests. Hey, please merge something newer.
Those lawyers don't listen to this podcast.
Let's hope that's true.
Who does, Chet? Who does?
My mom.
So, you know, I think, I'm not sure if there's much else to talk about in 3.1. There is, of course, my favorite feature, which isn't technically a studio feature, the emulator. The emulator now has snapshots. And you might say, snapshots, we had that many years ago.
It's full snapshots, right?
These snapshots are amazing, right? They happen automatically. You start the emulator and it takes whatever time it takes. It's not as bad as it used to be, but it could be, you know, I don't know, 20, 25 seconds to start a new emulator. When you quit that emulator, it dumps the state That takes maybe 4 or 5 seconds on my computer. When you start the emulator again, it starts in less than a second. And it's right back in the warm state. And this works, unlike the ancient snapshot support we used to have, this works with like GPU acceleration. This works with network, right? So like your app is in the middle or the ID or the AVD. You could be in the middle of some app typing in some text field and it comes back exactly where you left it.
I got to say, it's one of those features that, you know, when it doesn't work or when it's slow, we all complain about it. But when you stop and think about how it works, like the GPU acceleration, for instance, restoring that state means restoring state on the host side. And I have no idea how they do it.
Like, yeah.
That's black magic.
I mean, I saw a tech talk, you know, of how they did this. Because if you think about it, you know, just the RAM that is in a system image for Android, you know, you're talking about, you know, a couple of gigabytes of RAM on one of these things, right? Reading that from disk alone, you can't do that in less than a second on many hard disks, right? So they're being really smart about what they're reading and what they're lazily paging in. I think it's a feat that they've pulled this off, and it's amazing. So definitely,
and they pulled it off on multiple platforms too.
Yeah, and it works with, this isn't one of those like, oh, but you have to use the O system image. I'm like, no, I just used this morning on like a KitKat system image.
So this is another 3.1 preview thing?
Yes, it's in the current emulator preview. So they're, you know, emulator and studio aren't bundled together. You get the emulator via the SDK manager.
Okay.
But they have a preview channel. So if you're on the canary channel of studio, you get the canary channel of emulator. So
does that mean you could be running 3.0 and you could get the canary of this emulator with snapshots?
Yeah, but why wouldn't you use 3.1 of studio, Chet?
I'm just wondering if there is a large audience of people that are actually running in the full release, could they still try out some of these features without going all the way canary and studio? I know, obviously, they wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, you should see the look Tori's giving me now.
No.
So something else in the emulator, there were huge improvements to the hardware acceleration, the graphics hardware acceleration. So
The
support for OpenGL is much better now.
Yeah, you know, we did an instant run launch a couple of years ago, and Romav wrote the demo, the chess pieces that were scrolling around in space, and it was really fun. Unfortunately, that he used all the fancy graphic stuff, and none of it worked in the emulator, right? So we couldn't actually do a demo.
It was not that fancy, actually.
Well, to me, it was fancy. You know, like you had...
I'm talking in terms of what I was doing with GL itself.
Okay, it was fancy enough to not work on the emulator, right? So we had to do the demo with an actual real tablet, right? And a camera and sort of do split screen, which is fine. But I really kind of wanted to just sort of do screenshots. And now that demo, I believe, works.
Yeah, and I remember seeing benchmarks compared to real devices. And now they reduce the overhead of the GL support so much that we destroy, you know, Android devices in benchmarks because we're running on desktops.
Yeah,
it's nice to see that.
And I think the emulator is passing all the CTS tests, and that's how it actually can run the Play Store and certain images.
So do you think that there's a future coming soon where instead of carrying Android phones, people will just carry laptops and use the emulator as their Android device?
Well, that would make sense, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Because then you can also run other apps.
Yeah, and phones are getting bigger anyway, right? So
and laptops are getting smaller.
And people miss the flip phones. And you get that out of a laptop.
Yeah, but I gotta say, I really like touch, so we have to have touchscreen laptops in that case.
There are some coming online.
I mean, yeah.
Okay, I'm just saying you heard it here first.
Besides,
and only.
Don't you have a keyboard stuck to your fingers, basically all day? Every time I see you,
I told you how much I hate my new. I'm not gonna mention the brand of laptop I have, but I hate the keyboard so much.
Like
I can
it.
Go
I
on
same
for
one.
Hours.
Really like
I hate it. Yeah, you're wrong.
Yeah,
no, you guys are wrong.
Yeah. Wait till he gets one speck of dust in his keyboard and suddenly one of the keys don't respond anymore.
Oh, yeah. I had that one yesterday. Yeah, that's great.
So annoying.
I don't know. Yep. I'm clean. I don't get dust on my keyboard.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We're off topic. Yeah. So I think that's all I remember from 3.1. Is there anything else that, you know, obviously we just started. We had released one canary at this point.
Yeah, 3.1. But 3.0, like if we go back to 3.0, there's still a lot of really interesting new features. So we have the layout inspector that replaces the ancient hierarchy viewer.
Right.
About time.
So there are some differences. I think there are some things that we on the framework team used in Hierarchy Viewer that we probably want to bring back.
So Hierarchy Viewer, when I wrote the original one, that was over a weekend because I needed to debug a UI. Then it was rewritten. But it really was meant for the framework team. So it shows a lot of information. That's probably the kind of stuff you miss. But I think for app developers, they don't need,
at least
for first version.
List.
Well, they don't need to know the displays, but even some of the internal fields of views, like you don't need to know about the yep. the flags in the various right. bit fields that we have. You know, those were meant to debug the drawing loop. They right. were not meant for.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that it might be 3.1 where we are finishing the last couple of things that lets us delete it, the old hierarchy
yeah.
viewer. And I don't remember what the remaining thing was. There's yeah, one thing that someone insisted on, so we're like, okay, fine, we'll put that in, and then we can delete it.
So, right.
The other thing we added in 3.0 is the Device Explorer, which was, I think, the remaining right. thing that made us keep the monitor, mm-hmm. the device monitor.
Yeah, you have access app. To the file system.
So we can finally delete that.
So one of the reasons why today I still use Hierarchy Viewer instead of something like Layout Inspector is because all those tools in Studio, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe this has changed, but I need to have a project. I need to have, you know, I can't access the Layout Inspector without having an Android Studio project open.
Well, one of the big things we added in 3.0 was support for APK debugging and profiling.
Okay.
And what you do there is you just point your APK. And
but,
then from
but can
there,
I do that without having a project? Can I just...
That's what that does is, so this is an item on the welcome screen now. So instead
oh, okay.
of making a project, we say, oh, right. I want to do APK debugging. Then you just point your APK and then we make a fake project. Right, in a certain folder.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then we, you know, we let you do source mapping for shared objects. And I don't know if this works with Hierarchy Viewer, but it should.
But I still need an APK.
Yeah. I just don't
I understand.
If,
yeah.
I don't know if we want to put another menu item on the welcome screen for the one
right.
user who's like...
I understand. Yeah. And for app developers, they, yeah. I assume they have an APK if they're working on it.
Yeah. So the primary use case of that feature, which is an important 3.0 feature, is for people who are doing games and whatnot, right? So they're mm-hmm. building their app, maybe using something like Unity or Unreal
right.
or whatever. But they want to use our debugging features. They want to use our profiling features. And they don't want to try to have to make a Gradle project and try to map the sources and try to build it, right? They just want to say, here's my APK. Now let me debug
it. I was going to say the profilers are another example where it's nice if you don't have to open a project because sometimes you just want to profile something
yeah.
on the device. And
so the profiler supports that.
Right. You just need an APK. I'll just create a dummy APK.
Like a, yeah.
So I wanted to mention one more thing about Hierarchy Viewer. I saw a talk recently where they were showing an older version of Hierarchy Viewer, and they were talking about those three green and red dots. And those are, you know, a measure of how long drawing takes, and it tells you how long each of the different stages in rendering took. What you'll notice is those went away in recent versions of Hierarchy Viewer, and I assume that they're not there in Layout
Inspector
because they are fake.
So exactly.
if you depend on
well,
those dots,
yeah.
please
so
do not.
They're not fake. No, they're not fake. So what they do is...
Measure software.
Well, yeah, for layout and measure, they should be fairly close.
Right.
I mean, they try to remove the... to not take into account the overhead of certain things, but shouldn't be too far off. But yeah, for drawing, the numbers are... It's software drawing into a bitmap, so they have nothing to do
yeah.
with the actual drawing. What was interesting still for layout and measure is that it's not really the numbers they give you, but, you know, knowing what part is the biggest,
right.
like the bottleneck.
Right.
But yeah, like now we have better tools. We have SysTrace. We have, again, that tool is ancient and it needs an update.
Yes.
And we have the new CPU profiler in Android
yeah.
Studio.
Yeah, no, we're definitely working on profiling. And I think that, you know, giving more view information there, you know, you've seen how that we have all the live stuff where you can sort of drag over a rectangle and see what's happening. And if you're running on O, we even give you stack traces for free, right? People were filing a bug going, hey, what happened to the call stack button? Like, no, it's because you're running on O. You don't have to. You don't have to capture it. We just do it on the fly for you. And I assume that grabbing more and more information like this is something that, you know, the team is looking at. All right, let's talk about some of the big 3.0 features that we haven't touched. So Kotlin support, you know, no big surprise. That was a really big thing.
We mentioned that.
You mentioned that. You said it worked, but that it didn't. Wait.
Well, I was talking about Lint, but the big thing is that in 3.0,
in
the new project wizard, there's a big checkbox saying, I want to use Kotlin. And if you check it once, like it stays selected.
Yeah.
In a non-Kotlin project, you know, we put a language drop down into every wizard. So you can say, actually, I want to make this in Kotlin instead, which then takes through the whole flow of adding Kotlin to your project. And of course, we're bundling Kotlin with ID and so forth. So Kotlin is now fully supported for Android, though in 3.0, there still, you know, are gaps between the support you have in Kotlin from Java. There's still some things broken, so that's an ongoing priority for the team is to close that gap in 3.1 and maybe 3.2.
I don't say that. I was about to say that now nobody has an excuse to has any excuse left to not use Kotlin, but
yeah, I mean it's
you just give them one.
I don't know if that's an excuse. I mean, you know, yeah. To me, it's true that there are some minor things that are broken. So one of the things that I've noticed, for example, is that inlining, the inliner factoring doesn't always touch Kotlin files, which is a little annoying.
Okay.
But I still find myself much more productive writing Kotlin code overall. Oh, so it's still not, you know, it's not like, oh, well, there's just one thing missing. Let me not switch.
And again, because JetBrains builds both IntelliJ and Kotlin, the support is fantastic. But maybe that's a reason why you should merge 2017.3 in Studio.
Well, this comes from the Kotlin plugin, so which we are bundling the latest of. We're always updating that. So, you know, there's still a few things left, but it's getting better and better. And I think at this point, it's, you know, it's also supported. So file a bug, you know, and we work on it.
It's worth mentioning that a lot of Android developers were already using Kotlin. So it's not like we're enabling it for the first time. But what was really annoying for them was the tool would break all the time because Android Studio wasn't really paying attention to Kotlin. So they would change something and it wouldn't be compatible. Or we would change something and Kotlin would have to race to catch up.
But we are also seeing that after Google basically announced that we officially support it, there is a market increase in adoption among Android developers. So clearly this was another thing people were waiting for. Like, okay, you're telling me I can use this and my boss is not going to get angry.
I remember before the announcement, several developers had told me, or I saw them say that online, that you know, unless there was official support, they wouldn't adopt it, which kind of makes sense because, you know, if we break support for Kotlin in every version of the tools without even noticing because, you know, we don't care, you can't... It can be hard to rely on your project.
Yeah. Anyway, it's all a moot point. We are supporting it.
Yay.
We already talked about the Java 8 language features, the desugar and all that stuff. And we've also talked about the profiler. In fact, we have a whole episode about it. It's getting pretty old now, but all those features are there and working properly. So we have the CPU profiler, the memory profiler, network profiler, and so forth. And we also talked about the APK, profiling and debugging. And the device file explorer. That's the one that lets you sort of just drill into your file system, which is pretty useful. And it has more features than the old one. Like, it tries to be smart about getting root permission, you know, when it needs to and things like that.
Here's something I added to Android Studio 3.0. It's a small thing, but now that we have color management and support for white gamut displays, when you take a screenshot of the device, if the device is showing a white gamut window, the screenshot you get is in white gamut. So I did a small update to the screenshot viewer in Android Studio to take that into account and interpret the color profile. Don't rotate the image. That's one bug I still haven't managed to figure out. If you rotate the image, then we lose the profile for some reason.
Oops.
Yeah, it's because it calls methods deep down into IntelliJ where they drop the profile and... But anyway.
I'm just hearing P0 bug.
Rotate your head and said, oh, I have a feature request for you. What if you could take a screenshot on a high-res device and the resulting window didn't go off the bottom of your screen because it was too large to fit?
Does it do that?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it
scaled forever.
It.
Yes, and that's why the buttons are at the top, I assume.
Yeah.
So they say. It would be nice if the window was sized to be...
I thought we added scroll buttons. Okay, well, that definitely is a
to stay on screen, and also the screenshot maybe you could... fit on the screen instead of being at 100%.
Right. Otherwise, basically, you have to save the image and then go pop it up in a different explorer. It's just
I was
going to
say P0 bug
things.
For his color profile bug. I mean, I guess you get to argue that this is a pretty important bug too. So
the fact that it's been there ever since I've been here means probably not a P0.
Honestly, I don't think I've seen a bug report on it, but I could be wrong. We have a lot of bugs. All right, instant app support. That was a big, you know, big architectural thing for us to work on the build system side. We also added some refactorings and things like this, and you can create new feature modules, whatever.
Right, because there's a modularized feature somewhere. Right?
It's quite big, right? The different kinds of modules you add, and the base feature, and then the features you add on top. I don't really know all the details of it.
Speaking of instant apps, we were at a conference a couple weeks ago, and there was a good talk on an overview of how to create an instant app
by Cyril Moutier.
Right. So the conference was GDG DevFest
Nantes.
N-A-N-T-E-S. So the recording, I think they posted the recordings that same week, so that should be available on YouTube. So check that out.
Okay. Moving on, we also have support for Android Things. Have either one of you? Didn't we do a
We did. We did.
Things.
It went on about 4 months ago, I think it was posted. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So that's supported in the IDE. There's some wizards and things like that. We talked about the adaptive icons wizard, which makes it really easy to make these new launcher icons with foregrounds and backgrounds and shifting on top. In O, there's support for font resources, right? So yes. You can actually sort of drop in fonts and use those in a supported way now.
Oh, that probably played merry hell with your tools, didn't it?
It did. There was a lot of work on the layout librender. We have lint checks for it. We have layout editor property sheet support. We make it really easy to just, we have a font browser, in fact, where you can sort of click on a font in the layout editor, and it loads fonts dynamically from the remote font thing, but and it creates a local font resource. It's quite nice. So if you haven't used the font support in the editor, please try it.
Do you have a font viewer?
Yeah.
In IntelliJ? Like if I double click a font resource, like will it show me a sample of the
It'll
font?
It'll open up a rendering of a sample set of characters.
Okay.
It's a binary viewer. Yeah. It'll show you.
Yeah. I don't know if we did this in layoutlib or if we had something simpler, but I think that's what we did. Yeah. There's a bunch of support for Firebase app indexing. There's a whole assistant to help you write indexing code.
I really wish this podcast would come with a companion video that would just be Chet's face. You should see the face he makes, like when you hear things like Firebase indexing.
Yeah, so this is basically, it walks you through this flow of configuring your app, right? So you can set up these URLs that sort of match to your app. So when you're searching, you can click and sort of have deep links and things like that. So there's a whole assistant for app links as well. Because you have to create like a digital assets file and put it on your website. There's this it's pretty complicated. And this assistant makes it easy, right? It actually has dedicated, editors that let you to sort of enter in filters and things like that and walks you through it. So it's pretty good.
So is it the kind of stuff we help with for Instant Apps as well? Because if I remember Instant Apps, there is some part of it you need to put a file on your server, on your domain.
I don't know if that gets to reuse the whole app links assistant, or if there's some other support for that. I don't know. Layout editor has, we've worked really hard on it again. There are many new versions of constraint layout since last year. 1.1.
There's new versions all the time.
Yeah, and new features, right? And the layout editor, they put a lot of work into the overall usability and stability. So, if you looked at it in the past and thought, it's a little finicky, I can't quite do what I want, try it now. All the feedback I've seen on this is that, sure, I like to write my layouts by hand in XML, except constraint layout. The layout editor, you want to use that, right? It handles all the constraints, it previews for you.
Because ultimately our goal is to make an editor that's good enough that nobody will ever write XML by hand anymore.
Yeah.
So if you're not using the visual editor, like file bugs so that we know what's wrong with it.
There are two ways to accomplish that goal. We could either write a better visual editor, or we could just make the API and the XML approach to it so complicated that no one would want to do that.
But we already tried that.
For the
that
record,
didn't
we're
work.
Not doing that. Right? We're really trying to make the editor good. We've had, usability studies. We listen to feedback, respond, online and so forth. And so, I think at this point, if you're writing constraint layout by hand, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot. And I think if you're using other layouts, like relative layout or nested linear layouts, please don't. This is definitely a better way to do things. And we talked about layout inspector. The APK analyzer has been enhanced as well. So for example, the APK analyzer is where you point to an APK and you can drill into it to see what's there and see what are, for example, the largest things, right?
What I have in particular is the resource table. You get this big matrix that shows you where your resources are being used and
you can
what
see
configurations you could get rid of.
And there's that. And you can look at, your code and see, this package looks big. Why was this not shrunk? And so for that, you can now load a ProGuard mapping file. Instead of seeing com foo a.b.c, you'll now see your real names again. So it's easier to figure out, this package is that, and that I expect it to be shrunk. So let me go and tweak my ProGuard
Chet
rules.
Okay,
confused.
Well, so we talked about ProGuard going away in an R8 world.
Yes, so ProGuard itself goes away, but we have the mapping files, those are still going to be
so
there.
So it's a similar mechanism, just different.
Yes, still will be deleting code that isn't referenced. We're just going to do that with R8, right? But you'll still be using the mapping files you already wrote and things like that. So it can load those mapping files. It also does disassembly, which
is awesome.
Exactly. I've always wanted this because, I think just being able to look at a class and see what is this mapped to is kind of nice. I can't really make a better case for it than that. It's kind of like looking at the Kotlin bytecode, right? Bytecode viewer. You learn what's happening behind the scenes, and it's useful.
Yeah, and it's useful sometimes, especially, again, when you use tools like Dsugger or some advanced APIs and you want to really understand what's happening to your code. And most of the time, you don't need to care, right? But if you have a hot loop, it's always good to double check.
Right. So we talked about the D8 preview. In this spring, we added a new Maven repository, right? So the Google Maven repository. So we now use that out of the box with all the templates, and there was actually quite a bit of work we had to do in the IDE. For example, the warnings that tell you that there's a newer version available. You used to be able to just peek at the disk and see, okay, what's there now. This one actually connects to the server, and that does mean that it stays more live, right? Because it doesn't just see what you have already installed with the SDK lib, but it knows what's really the latest version. So we support the Maven repository. And there's miscellaneous other smaller changes. Well, not some of them aren't small.
So it's not a two-step process, because it used to be you would have to go to the SDK manager to update the local repository. Then you could update your project. So now you can update directly like you would with regular Maven.
Yeah, exactly. And, we also merged IntelliJ 2017.1. You may think, well, that's already old. But if you were using something older than 3.0, you were using a much older version of IntelliJ. So, you know, that counts.
So what you're saying is it could be worse.
It could be worse. So definitely do not use 2.3.
That's where we set the bar now.
Yeah, 3.0 is the bar. If you're feeling adventurous, use 3.1 and give us feedback. But if you just want to get your job done, stick with 3.0 and let us know if there are serious bugs, and then we'll consider a 3.0.1.
You know, I can't use the previews anymore because you have those yellow icons and I don't like them.
The what?
The yellow icons for the preview/canary releases.
If you want, I'll make you a special build where that icon is blue.
Thanks. Yeah, would be awesome.
That can be done. I'll even give you a discount. That's it, basically.
All right. That's all. Could you do more next time?
We're going to try. You know, we don't want to make the releases drag out this long. It had, like I said, a lot to do with all the stuff that sort of forced our hand to combine all these things together, and it took a while to get it right. But I'm hoping that we won't have long releases like this.
Although at the same time, and granted, my setup is a little weird because I use CLion, I use Android Studio, and I use IntelliJ, and I use those on two or three different machines, and I feel like I'm always updating one of them. So I kind of like it when there's no updates.
All right, we're not forcing you to upgrade, right? Just making sure. If you want to use Studio 1.5, you can.
No, if I see a dialog that tells me there's a new version, of course I have to click yes update.
I'm like that too, but when I walk around offices, so many people will have these like little warning dialogues. They'll just ignore them. I'll go, they'll show me something, and
they want to click on it for them.
I know, exactly. Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us on the podcast today, Tor, to talk about your work.
Anything coming that you can talk about?
But
save something for a future podcast.
There you go.
I see.
All right. Bye.